Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
Estás escuchando The Fifth Floor.
The Fifth Floor'ı dinliyorsunuz. Bizimle kalın.
Tumhi ekta The Fifth Floor farnak amidi sobat.
This is The Fifth Floor, at the heart of global storytelling with BBC journalists from all around the world. I'm your host, Farnak Amidi. Hollywood star Idris Elba recently announced he'll soon be relocating to Africa.
I'm a God boy, so I like my sun, I like the heat, I like my food.
I'm here to bolster the film industry. That is a 10-year process. I won't be able to do that from overseas.
The British actor, who has heritage from Ghana and Sierra Leone, is not the only one. In recent years, there has been a reverse migration movement among people of African descent, especially from the US and Europe, who have decided to move back to the continent. Noor Abida has recently presented a documentary for BBC Africa Eye. It's called The Homecoming, where she met several second-generation French nationals who decided to relocate to Senegal. Noor, welcome to the Fifth Floor studio. It's great to have you with us.
Good afternoon.
So tell me, Noor, who were some of these people you got a chance to talk to?
So among the people that we spoke to, we spoke to Audrey, she's a school teacher.
Donc je suis Audrey, maman de quatre enfants. Je suis enseignante éducatrice.
She lives in Paris. She wants to practice her faith, you know, more the way that she feels like. She has four kids.
En France, moi ça fait 13 ans que je suis ingénieur. Je gagne correctement ma vie, je suis bien.
We also spoke to Menka. He left a very stable engineering career, he had a very stable job, and he was born near Marseille. Now he lives in Paris, and you know, he has a really big ambition, and he just thought that there was a lot of barriers for him to achieve what he really wanted. We also speak to Fanta.
Hello, P.
Who is a nurse. She wants to fulfill her dream and her father's dream to open a clinic in Senegal. Mm-hmm. She has a son, and we also spoke to Salamata. So she's been in Senegal. She's been there for 3 years.
Salamata.
And you know, she talks about, we spoke to her, we went to Senegal and we spoke to her about, you know, her journey and what was it like and why she wanted to make the move and, you know, what was the reality once she actually went to Senegal.
Mm. Let's get deeper. Like, why did Audrey, the school teacher, why does Audrey feel the need to go back to Senegal?
What she says is that she feels like she wants her value to align, you know, with what she's practicing. So one morning, I went to school with her. I took her on the way to school. And before she goes to school, because of the law in France, she has to remove her hijab.
Mm.
Because of the law, the laicity in France. And I mean, for me, that was quite interesting to see that. And when I asked her, you know, how did it feel like?
C'est frustrant.
She said it was very frustrating. That was one of the reasons that she also wants to leave. She feels like she wants to practice her faith in a way that she feel like.
Mm-hmm. For those who don't know, can you explain what laicity is?
Yeah, so laicity, the principles rest on the separation between church and state. So you're not allowed to show any ostentatious sign of religion, mm-hmm, in public buildings. So in 2004, in all state schools, the wearing of the hijab was banned. So for Audrey, this is why it has an impact on her.
Secularity is the same. You know, you say the separation of church and state, but with laïcité, it's a bit different.
Yeah, because I feel like laïcité is such a French concept, and it's so central to French society. Mm-hmm. But, you know, many French Muslims feel like sometimes it's their religion that is often being singled out.
And what about Menka, the engineer?
For Menka, what was interesting about Menka, what really marked me about him and all the characters is that they have so much ambition. And he felt like when he was in France, there were things that he wanted to achieve that he wasn't able to. So that's why he talked about having a glass ceiling.
En France, on peut avoir l'impression d'avoir un plafond vert.
Mm. And he said that when he was going to Senegal, that's something that he couldn't see anymore, and that all of a sudden the opportunities were limitless.
When you say glass ceiling, is that like a racial thing? Like, you know, for us women, we say we feel that there is a glass ceiling, and it's because of our gender.
It does mention that, you know, in France, for him, in his experience, there isn't a lot of diversity.
Dans les chefs, les gens qui les commandent, les gens qui les dirigent, on retrouve très peu de diversité, mais vraiment très peu, voire pas du tout.
He did say, you know, in the companies that he was working with, you know, he didn't see a lot of diversity.
People like him.
Leadership, yeah.
And the leadership. Mm-hmm. And what about Fanta?
Fanta, so yeah, she mentioned that for her, so she has this project that she wants to settle like a clinic in Senegal. And for her, something, she has a son. And what was hard, there was an incident that happened recently where her son got stopped and searched by the police.
Mon fils a subi un contrôle au faciès. En tant que maman, c'est assez traumatisant quand même de se dire que son fils a été contrôlé. On ne sait pas.
That was something that was very scary for her, and all of a sudden, you know, she was really scared. Even, you know, when I looked at her body language at the beginning, you know, she was just like really open, and you know, and then when she started talking about the incident, I could see the fear in her eyes.
So, would you say that the recent political events in France, especially the rise of the far right, has had an impact on their decision?
Yeah, because after the death of Nahel, who was shot by the police, there was like a huge riot that really sparked. And I think it really sparked something in the country, something that was already there. You know, it was something that had been brewing for a really long time. Mm. And I think it just made it even bigger.
Come on the surface.
Yeah, it's come on the surface. And when you see the rise of the right wing, you know, at the last parliamentary elections. And we also saw that racist crimes have gone up a third last year. Mm-hmm. When we did our investigation, we had a look at some reports, and one of the reports said that 91% of that report that were interviewed said that they had been victim of discrimination.
When you're talking about the reasons these people want to move to the continent, to Africa, to Senegal, on the surface it seems that they're going for different reasons, but there is an underlying reason which is the same. But how do they feel about it?
Mm-hmm.
Does it make them feel sad, or is it something they look forward to?
And also another big reason why they want to leave is because they really have this need to reconnect with their roots.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something also that's really driving them, because they are choosing to go to Senegal, the countries where they have some, you know, family attached, or, you know, they have like, so something like so deep that they really want to reconnect with their roots and with their background and with their culture. I got to spend, you know, some time with the families, and also personally, you know, I can see that, you know, leaving the families behind is really not an easy choice. You know, it's the countries where they grew up, they have their friends there. I got to meet, you know, the friends of, you know, Menka. You know, you really see that they have their attach, but then their dream is so much bigger. They're so passionate and they're so determined, you know, to succeed, that they really want to do everything to make it happen.
You know, when you mentioned as well, you met like Menka's friend, family, you sat down with them, you had food with them, and they mixed French and Senegalese food. And that for you was a symbol of integration. So tell me about that experience.
Yeah. And I think, you know, as a journalist, it's one of the best part of being a journalist, because you really do get, you know, to have access to places and people that you wouldn't. And yes, I got to spend a lot of time with all these families, and especially with Menka's families. They invited me to, you know, the big family dinner that they would have. And I got to do like a raclette and a bisap. Mm-hmm. So, you know, bisap is the Senegalese drink that, you know, people would usually drink. And, you know,
what is it? It's
a kind of like, how do you say, like a grenadine. It's a red color, and it's really sweet, and it's really delicious. And, you know, critics may say that, you know, people from the immigration don't make any effort to integrate. But when I see this, for me, it's just, you know, it was the symbol of, you know, how much more integration could you have, you know, to have a raclette, which is, you know, something that is typically
very French.
Very French. And yeah, meeting with Menka's family, because he grew up in Marseille, in the south of France. It was really eye-opening, because I can see they were so lovely. They love him so much.
Mm.
And there was a scene, actually, there's a scene in this documentary where he sees his niece, and he told me afterwards that, you know, he hadn't seen his niece for a couple of months, and, you know, she grew up so fast. And he was explaining that, you know, one of the sacrifices that he's making is that, you know, he's not going to be able to see his niece anymore. He's not going to see her grow up anymore. So that's something, you know, it really shows, you know, how important this is for him. And speaking to his mother and his aunties, they were talking about, and when I asked the mother, you know, does she feel more French or Senegalese?
Plus sénégalaise ou plus française?
Plus française. Plus française.
She says that she feels more French because she arrived in France when she was a baby, and I thought that was very interesting. I also met with the auntie who said that She wished that, you know, growing up, she had been more raised with her Senegalese culture. For example, they're from a Mendjak. You know, Mendjak is an ethnicity of Senegal. It's one of the languages that they speak there, and that they didn't speak Mendjak at home. So they wished that, and for her to pass this on to her kids was a bit difficult because she hadn't been, you know, brought up in that culture, in with the language.
And what did the family think about, for instance, Menka moving to Senegal? It must be very difficult for them as well, because obviously he has his worries. He cannot see his niece, he cannot see his mom, auntie. But what about them? They must miss having him around as well.
It's difficult, because even for the mother, when he first announced it to his mother, she didn't really understand because, you know, she made the journey, you know, from Senegal to France, and then he's doing the exact opposite. So at first she didn't understand, but, you know, I think with time, and because his project was really concrete, you know, he set up his company. So it's not like he's living, it's just a dream, you know. He does have a company, and he has his the person he launched his company with. Mm. He's in Senegal already, so he already, you know, have like some contacts.
Mm. And you traveled to Senegal yourself, and you met this woman. She's moved there and has started her own business. She's an entrepreneur. Tell me about it. What did she tell you about the move? Was it easy for her? What was her experience like?
Her name was Salamata. Mm. She left a very well-paying job in banking in France. Mm. She thought that, you know, she wanted to achieve more, so she moved to Senegal. And at first, when she arrived, it was very difficult for her, because she says that she was really shocked when people kept calling her the Frenchie.
On m'appelait la Française. Donc voilà, c'était clairement, oui, Salah, la Française. La Française, mais vraiment partout.
And even speaking to Audrey at the beginning of the documentary, she said people call her a Toubab. And Toubab is the Wolof name for white person. Even though she's from Senegal, so Audrey's not from Senegalese descent, but she's not white. She's black. So they both, you know, they still feel, you know, outsider. And for Salamata, you know, she felt rejected in France, and when she arrived in Senegal, she felt, you know, rejected again. So it was really hard at the beginning. And she also said that as a woman, it was very hard to set up a business, because she said she encountered a lot of misogyny.
Misogyne, ça peut pas tellement, mais je pense que c'est le cas.
Qu'est-ce que tu veux dire par là?
Dans le sens où vraiment ils ont quand même du mal à accepter qu'une femme peut être CEO d'une entreprise.
For example, she gives that example where, like, one day her driver was late, and she knows because she's running a tour company, so it's important that, you know, people are on time. And when she brought that up, you know, they couldn't believe that, you know, a woman actually is saying that to them, you know. So, yeah, I think that was quite hard for her. But now she says that she came there with humility, you know, and now she's feeling a lot better, and she's happy that she made the move. She says she doesn't always feel at home, but she says she's really happy that.
It must be so difficult to, you know, grow up in France and feel like an outcast, and then go somewhere to feel at home and still feel like you're an outcast. It's something that happens. I've heard it a lot from also Iranians who move back to Iran after years. In Senegal, you also met another woman, Marie. Mm-hmm. Tell me about her. Mm-hmm. What was her story?
So Marie is a facilitator. What she does is that she helps people from the diaspora who wants to go to Senegal to set up their businesses.
Poser la première pierre pour que les autres puissent continuer, puis que nos enfants prennent le relais.
And I also got to have dinner iftar with Marie's family, and that was really interesting. That was really eye-opening, because she explained that the difference between the generations was that, you know, for the parents, the primary focus was to integrate, but now for the new generation, they really need have this need to reconnect with the roots.
Et je pense qu'il y a vraiment aussi ce besoin de se reconnecter à ses racines.
And she thinks that it's important for the diaspora to come back and invest in Africa. Mm. And that's one of the reasons why. So that's why she's also pushing forward.
Yeah, I guess, you know, when you were talking about it, I was thinking, yeah, when you've migrated, for instance, you're later in life, you're in your 20s or 30s and you migrate, your identity is pretty clear, you're an immigrant. But when you're a second generation, you're somewhere in between, and they're always searching for that identity. And you can see it in all of these stories, that their parents are actually more well integrated. You don't have a choice. You're an immigrant and you go with it. But then the second generation are always looking for that identity. That's very interesting.
Yeah, I think that was one of the main themes, actually. And even doing this documentary, you know, I've had so many people just that even that I don't know telling me the similar things, and it's things that I've been feeling also. So it just really shows how current the story is.
Yeah, exactly. In France, they call this move back to Africa the silent exodus. Mm-hmm. Why is that?
So it's hard actually to, you know, to give numbers about how many people are leaving because of French law. You know, French law prohibits the gathering of data when it comes to ethnicity, mm-hmm. race or religion. But there was a survey that was done, then more than 1,000 French Muslims who have left France. And it shows that it's a growing trend.
Mm.
And I think, you know, it follows the peak of Islamophobia in the wake of like the 2015 attacks. And we spoke to Olivier Estève. He's the author of the report. And he told us that, you know, like secularism and, you know, discrimination are the heart of this silent fight. That's how he called it. And that ultimately this immigration from France constitutes a real brain drain, because when we see like the kind of people that it's, you know, impacting is primarily highly educated mm-hmm. French Muslims.
Obviously, this story is very close to your heart as well, mm-hmm. because you are a second generation mm-hmm. immigrant as well. And you grew up in France, like the people you interviewed. So when you were doing this documentary, how did it feel?
It was so interesting. And it was hard and heartwarming at the same time. So yes, I did grow up in France. My dad is from Tunisia. My mom is from Martinique. And growing up in France, it was just really particular because, you know, at home, I had this whole culture, you know, it was such a rich culture and, you know, like my Tunisian background and like Martinican background. But then sometimes I felt like, you know, outside of the home, it wasn't always encouraged. And sometimes it felt like living a double life, mm-hmm. you know? You know, for example, things like I would never, like, you know, go out with my hair curly like this. You know, I felt like I had to straighten my hair because otherwise, you know, my hair like looked, I mean, I've told several times, you know, my hair looks unprofessional or like it looks wild, you know. And when you're young, and at the time I was really young because I was 17 when I left. And when you're young and, you know, you hear this, you just think, you know, this is the truth and, you know, you just have to change yourself and be like everybody else. So I felt it was very difficult for me. But then like now, looking back, I just thought, I just wish, you know, I had maybe a bit more confidence and just I had like, you know, fought back against all these little things there.
Mm. So doing this documentary, what kind of impact did it have on you?
So we have another hour, 2 hours. I think it just really made me realize, you know, what is home and that home is not just one place. Mm. I think home, the concept of home and identity is just way, way more complex and way more nuanced than I initially thought. And I can see that it's actually something that is not, I don't know if torturing is the right word, but it's like inside so many people's minds, you know. I received so many messages from people that I don't know that was telling me, yeah, actually, you know, do you feel at home anywhere? You know, and that's what I felt because when I'm in France, I don't feel French. The only place I feel French, for example, is here, you know. It's when I'm not in France. That's when I feel the most French because here, for example, you know, you can see my French accent is so strong, so you can tell that I'm French. But when I'm in France and I speak French, I'm like, really, you're French? You don't look really French. When I'm in Tunisian, I'm not Tunisian enough because, you know, my Arabic is not good enough. And then when I'm in Martinique, you know, my Creole is not good enough. You can tell that I'm not from there. So sometimes I do wonder, you know, where am I from and who am I? What am I doing here? But I think sometimes it's bigger than that. And I have accepted, you know, that
you're all of them.
It's more complex. And there isn't like a single place where I'm feeling like home. It's not just about the place. It's about, you know, the people, the culture, the music, the what makes you feel this very deep, deep sense of, you know, being attached to something.
After doing this documentary and speaking to all of these people, do you think you will consider giving it a go, maybe going and living in Tunisia for a while or Martinique?
I think in the future I would love to eventually, yeah, just, you know, because that's something also I really miss because, you know, when we're talking about, you know, integration, so for example, at home, my dad is Tunisian and he never spoke to us in Arabic, so I don't speak Arabic fluently. And trying to learn Arabic, you know, when I'm almost 30, it's really difficult, you know? And I mean, inshallah, you know, I hope I get there, but I think that this part of my roots I really want to reconnect with. I think I would love to, I don't know if I would move there for good, but just, you know, for like a part of my life, just to reconnect with my Tunisian background, I would love that. Mm. And even for Martinique, I just love to go there, you know, because my grandmother still lives there. It's been so enlightening to do this journey. So we organized the screening of the documentary in Paris. and it sold out a couple of hours after it was announced. So I think it really shows, you know, how important this discussion is and how current it is.
It is. It's a great discussion. I can talk about this for hours with you. Thank you so much, Noor Abida from BBC Africa Eye. You're listening to The Documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm Farhana Kamidi, and in this episode of The Fifth Floor, we are talking about people relocating to Africa. I've mentioned earlier that British actor and producer Idris Elba said he wants to move to the continent and promote the film industry there. And do you know why we know about this? Because he told the one and only Thomas Noddy, who's joining me right now from Ghana. Thomas!
Thank you.
So tell me, how did you end up hanging out with Idris Elba?
Well, recently, the Ghana Film Authority hosted a second edition of the Africa Cinema Summit. Mm-hmm. So British actor Idris Elba was one of the main speakers at the event. And that's where I met him for this particular interview.
And what did he tell you about relocating to Africa?
He said he's planning to relocate to Africa to help develop the film industry, as you mentioned earlier.
I'm here to bolster the film industry. That is a 10-year process. I won't be able to do that from overseas. I need to be on the continent. I'm looking at a Pan-African way of looking. So I'm going to live in Accra. I'm going to live in Freetown. I'm going to live in, you know, Zanzibar.
He also said he's not going to be based in just one country or city in Africa. Mm-hmm. I remember his mother is from Ghana and his father is from Sierra Leone. So he also got a lot of ongoing projects in Africa, including building a film studio in Ghana and Zanzibar. He said he will relocate to places where there are stories.
Our culture has oftentimes been told back to Africans out from outsiders. All you're going to see is trauma, how we were slaves, how, you know, we were colonized, how it's just war. And when you come to Africa and you're raised here, you know that's not true. So it's really important that we own those stories.
Idris has roots in Ghana, as I mentioned earlier, and Ghana is one of the pioneers of Africa's storytelling and film industry, and it dates back to the 1920s when the British first introduced cinematography. But the movie industry in this country has faced significant challenges in recent years, including lack of funding and copyrights infringements. It's been very difficult for filmmakers to make profit, but there's also a lot of potential. There have been notable films like Love Brewed in the African Port and The Beast of No Nation, which featured Idris himself. All these films were filmed in Ghana here. And so the thinking is that he wants to try to see how he can build the industry to a level where it can be competitive globally.
And Thomas, what do you think having a person like Idris Elba over there in these countries producing films, what kind of impact would it have on the industry there?
That will have a huge impact. Will have a huge impact.
When you see me, you see a little version of yourself, and that encourages us. You know, it's cyclical.
And we're talking about a Hollywood star here. His influence as a movie star would definitely attract a significant investment and draw global attention. And just to put this in perspective, despite the population of over 1.3 billion, Africa is home to just 1,700 cinema screens. It's the most underserved market globally. So there's a lot of potential here, and many industry players can explore that to their advantage.
And Thomas, he's not the only person who's making this move or thinking of making this move. There has been in recent years a reverse migration. And in 2019, Ghana hosted the Year of Return. I remember we also spoke about, if I'm not mistaken, you were hanging out with Stevie Wonder, or were you somewhere that Stevie Wonder was there as well?
That was another interesting interview. Steve gave me the exclusive. He was very happy to be in Ghana. Steve Wonder came to Ghana as part of an initiative to be granted an honorary citizenship. And he also has plans of doing some projects here. Yes, it was all part of the Year of Return initiative. The government of Ghana launched this initiative to encourage Africans in the diaspora to relocate to the country. and to invest. And now what we have is the beyond the return. So they are urging Africans in the diaspora to come back to the continent and especially to Ghana to invest in diverse areas. And a lot of them have made the move. Some have been given Ghanaian citizenship. Recently, American rapper Ja Rule visited Ghana in April to break ground for the construction of a school in the country. Michael Blankson, a Ghanaian-American comedian, also opened a school in Ghana in January last year. So there are several areas that Africans in the diaspora are investing in Ghana here.
And are you seeing changes on the ground?
Yes, a lot of them are building in Ghana. There's a particular village in coastal Ghana where they've been allocated land and they are building a whole town. Mm. A lot of them are allocated land to be able to build and relocate. So that project is ongoing. A lot of houses are springing up there and most of them, a lot of them continue to come to Ghana, especially in December. So this December, the government is expecting a lot of them to come. They normally come here during the festive period, enjoy themselves, explore the country and try to see the areas that they can invest and then make up their mind whether they want to return to make investments or just come and have fun and go back.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Thomas. Thomas Nadi, next time, let us know which celebrity you're going to be sitting down and having conversation with. We'd love to have you on the fifth floor.
Thank you very much for having me.
BBC Africa's Thomas Nadi on his most recent celebrity scoop. I'm Farhana Khamidi. The Fifth Floor team this week was
Alicia Joya
and
Hannah Dean.
The sound engineers were
Philip Lander
and
Neva Masirian.
Thanks for listening. You've been listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.